You are listening to the KBOO Evening News from Monday, April 21st, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes David Rosenberg and Onyx. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Eric Gladys, Antonio Gonzalez, and Terry D. The director of this evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Anna Wilcox.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Dave Johnson. The Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT, has finally gotten funding to start its project to expand Interstate 5 through North and Northeast Portland. The project includes caps on the freeway that can be built on, reconnecting Portland's historically black neighborhood that was bisected when the freeway was built. The Transportation Committee heard presentations on the project at their committee meeting on April 21st. Here's Councillor Angelita Murillo.
I'm really excited to hear from these different stakeholders today and get more information directly from Albina Vision Trust and folks from No More Freeways. I thought it was important to have these two different community perspectives at the table. I think we hear a lot from industry and other big areas, but this is really, I think, a deep community discussion that needs to happen. There were a lot of historic harms that this project is attempting to address that I think are valuable. I'm personally really invested in the cap portion of this, as much as I don't like the expansion of freeways. And also, we're in a very ever-changing political landscape, especially at the federal level, where some of our big infrastructure projects are at risk with the Trump administration and trying to figure out what they're going to do, what they're going to choose to fund, what they're going to choose to cut moving forward. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from both Albina Vision Trust and No More Freeways on their perspectives on this issue and if they can bring more light to things that we as a council should be aware of and how this is going to impact our city moving forward. So with that, I believe we have Albina Vision Trust coming up first. Thank you. So good to see you, Executive Director Winta.
Thank you. Good morning, Council. I'll be joined shortly by JT Flowers, our Director of Government Affairs and Communication as well. So thanks for having us here today. Chair Clark, I appreciate your invitation for additional briefings. This is a really important project. And of course, thank you, Councillor Murillo, for providing time for community perspectives. As I was thinking about how to share what has now been almost a decade of work on this project, it occurs to me that even when we present you with carefully constructed facts, the entire truth is still often obfuscated. And, you know, one of the challenges for the Albina Vision Trust at this point is this idea that we're somehow being duped into supporting this project. So I want to be really clear that our support for the project is rooted in our very clear and deep understanding of trade-offs, of project components, and how we've gotten here to this point. At many times, we've been ODOT's fiercest critic, but what's been important to us is our orientation and our commitment to not being reactive. That our vision is rooted in proactively building a future that restitches Albina and in addressing the gash that is I-5. We are grounded by the memory for many in our community that the highway represents people's homes and businesses and faith institutions, that the early work of the Albina Vision Trust actually started with tours with students from Tubman Middle School. Imagine walking around that neighborhood with students that are 4 feet tall. This is the only place in Portland where you can be crossing a street facing traffic that's flying off of the off-ramps. We don't think that's acceptable today, and it's certainly not acceptable as we prepare to build a district that will continue to welcome thousands of families into the area. And so we know that Broadway is the most dangerous street for all modes of transportation within Portland. We also know that the impact of the freeway has prevented really anything from happening in the district. This is why when the Albina Vision work first started and we zoomed out to think about all of the pieces that would need to be addressed, the freeway was the most obvious, right? We needed to be able to tunnel or cap it so that the broader development vision could move forward. Albina Vision Trust has brought to this project the understanding that change is inevitable. We know that this district, 94 acres of prime Central City real estate, will change. The question is, who will it benefit in that change? And we made the decision early on that we didn't want to witness those changes. We wanted to be actively shaping the transformation. And so in embracing the fact that the status quo is not going to be enough, we have brought together community, political, and technical expertise to embrace the fact that there will be change to deliver better outcomes for all of Portland. Together, we have completely redesigned the project that was originally introduced in 2017. We did not do this alone. The City of Portland has played an incredibly important role, including being willing to walk away from the project in order to make sure that the design of the project itself reflected Portland values, that it reflected our community's value to restorative justice, and that it committed and that it reflected our intent to be both supporters of a project moving forward without giving away our need to stay vigilant about the outcomes. The city's coordination on this project has outlasted many commissioners in charge and now of transportation. And now we're sitting here at another important inflection point, asking you to both consider and respect the deep engagement and consensus building work that's happened on this project, not only with AVT, but with Raymore Construction, where this project represents generational opportunities for minority contractors. There has been deep consensus building work with Portland Trailblazers, recognizing that this part of the city is effectively Portland's front porch and that it's not acceptable for us to have an open freeway in the part of the city where most of us gather. Fundamentally, this is a state project that was intended to meet the needs of freight that has been foundationally transformed into something else, something better. And if there are questions about whether or not that change has gone far enough, you need to look no further than the $450 million in federal funding that was awarded to this project as part of the Reconnecting Communities Planning, Reconnecting Communities Project, intended to address exactly these kinds of freeways that have torn through Black and Brown communities. This project represents the braiding of climate, community, and economic, statewide economic development goals to deliver an outcome and a project that would not have existed if not for the organizations, the organizing of organizations like ours, and the willingness of City of Portland to stand up for what was right at every critical juncture. At this point, We ask that you continue to stand with us, again, not as a rubber stamp for a project, but as vigilant partners committed to forward momentum. We do not want to see this council be the one that snatches defeat from the jaws of victory on a project that represents over a decade of hard-earned work and community building. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass it to JT.
And I'm so sorry for popping in here late. You know, reporters can be very chatty, especially around this issue, and they caught me in the hallway. My name is JT Flowers. I'm the Director of Government Affairs here at the Albina Vision Trust. I had the honor of being led by this incredible human being who's the most fantastic leader I know. You know, we're here for a very clear reason. This project is not a project that is unfolding in a vacuum, right? Our city and our state are in the midst of transformative change that's going to fundamentally alter the Portland of 50 years from now. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is, what type of future are we committed to building for future generations of children who call this place home? I'd like to point to a really important story that I think really illustrates the significance of what we're trying to do through the Highway Cover Project. When Secretary of Transportation, I should say former Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg came and visited Portland, he saw two projects. He went out with TriMet and the governor to check out the FX line being put out on 82nd Avenue. And then he came and toured our project area alongside then Congressman Earl Blumenauer and sat down with our team. After that tour, he said something that we found incredibly charming at the time, but we didn't think meant much in a substantive way. He said, you know, in his tenure as Secretary of Transportation, he's been to 603 cities and towns across this country. He has been to all 50 states. Nowhere in the country has he seen a project that is not only as audacious as this one, but as feasible as well. We say, hey, we get it. You're probably going to run for president at some point. If anything, you might have secured our vote through your charm, but we didn't expect it to translate to anything material. Just 6 months later, the well over $488.5 million in federal funding from the USDOT's Reconnecting Communities and Neighborhoods grant program came through the door, and our congressional delegation put out a press release. That press release didn't say federal delegation secures $488.5 million for ODOT's highway cover and expansion and PBOT's Broadway Main Street project. It said federal delegation secures nearly $500 million in funding for Albina Vision infrastructure projects. There's an understanding even at the federal level that the significance of this project is in the ways in which it ties into everything else being built around it. Our 94-acre footprint makes us the largest restorative redevelopment in the entire United States of America. We're building it right here in our own backyard in Portland's Central City. What we're trying to build at the most fundamental level is a Central City neighborhood that is not only accessible to working class folks, to Black folks, to historically displaced folks, but an entire neighborhood that is built around supporting the generational well-being and advancement of those communities in a material way. That absolutely has to extend to the way that we think about built infrastructure and built space. And this cover is a direct representation of that. Of course, we know our community was bisected by the construction of I-5. My father and my grandparents were actually displaced by the construction of this highway, right? We know that this is not an abstraction for us. This is not an intellectual exercise. When Winter talks about decades of work that went into pushing ODOT critically, pushing our state critically to get to the hybrid solution that we're at right now, she's not just speaking to speak. These are real things that people have spent years of their lives and probably shaved years off of their lives in order to accomplish. So when we stand here and say we really deeply advocate for for the delivery of a full project, we do so in that full context. This highway cover and the I-5 Rose Quarter Improvement Project is not only, again, something that exists in a vacuum. It connects to the way we're thinking about the redevelopment of the East Side waterfront, to the way that we're thinking about the historic redevelopment of the 10.5-acre Portland Public Schools administrative headquarters campus, to the way that we're thinking about reactivating and renovating the two most significant arenas in the history of our state. We're trying to build a neighborhood. This project is a really, really significant step in us getting there. Us getting shovels in the ground is important, but we also want you to know that we appreciate all of your leadership and your continued commitment to making sure that all of this work that community has put in over the course of decades isn't all for nothing. No.
And just one last note here about the slogan "lids, not lanes" in this position that I've heard people advocate for. I think it's important for us to address that obviously the part of this project that we are most invested in is the highway cover. And yet there is no highway cover without a complete project, which is why we are really clear about saying we support the delivery of the complete project. As you know, after listening to this morning's presentation from PBOT, I think it's safe to say I don't see City of Portland raising their hand to say we want to finance and build a highway cover in this part of the city, right? That's not happening. I don't see a path for the state to say we will build a highway cover here without meeting the needs of freight and other rural industries. Our federal partners have said the delivery of this project is the best way for the covers to be delivered, which is why they granted their largest award to this project. And so unless, you know, someone has a secret plan for delivering just the covers, I want to be really realistic and just honest on the record in saying that that is not a real position.
The public is getting confused as if we could do the lids. And I'm gonna ask you this question, JT,
sure,
again, clearly, because I know Winter just said it, but do you think that we can do these lids without doing the whole project?
There's absolutely no path financially or politically to developing a highway cover without the expansion of the freeway. And just for a little bit of additional clarity here, you know, we've always publicly maintained that we are quite agnostic on the widening of the highway. Our priority is the reconnection of our community. If we could viably find a path to capping the highway without expanding it, we would be two thumbs up, right? It would require significantly less funding. It would get us there quicker. We would be very happy to support a reality like that. But functionally, we have to be pragmatists in the work that we do, especially if we're committed to executing on these promises that we've made to community. But the reason that we say the lid and the widening are inextricably tethered to one another is because the project has been technically engineered on a structural level and in a manner that necessitates that both things happen at the same time. The highway will be widened while also being deepened to accommodate for larger girders capable of supporting vertical development on top of the cover, which was actually the most significant piece of feedback that came from that 3-year-long independent cover assessment project, which was, of course, a result of community saying, ODOT, absolutely not. You're not expanding this highway without addressing the harm that the construction of this highway caused to begin with, right? So again, this is not AVT getting up here saying we're buddy-buddy with anybody who throws money the direction of this project. It's us saying that pragmatically and practically, this is the path that we have to walk down. And it's time for us to remain deeply aligned right, and committed to the delivery of the project.
And I really appreciate that comprehensive explanation.
Yeah, thank you so much for your presentation. I think it was really important for us to hear the context and the history behind this. Really, my only core question is this. With the Trump administration, knowing that he and his administration do not care about Black communities, and they have been stripping federal funding for a lot of BIPOC communities and anything that is coming our way that's actually helpful to us, what guarantee do you have that that funding is secured for the cap? Because my earnest, truest, sincerest fear is that they are going to give us the money to expand the highways. The highways will get expanded, and then they will yank the funding for the caps. And then we will have a bigger problem than we had before. That's genuinely my concern.
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Councillor. You know, I think a few things, and I know JT will have more to add here. One, you know, we can't deliver you certainty. And I have to say that. But what we can guarantee and what we've seen over the last few years and have a lot of confidence in is actually the leadership at PBOT, right? PBOT has remained vigilant in tracking every single stage of the project to make sure that as the project moves through the process, what is moving forward is what has been agreed to. So I think it's just important to state that on the record and in any future briefing that might involve ODOT, to consider involving PBOT to talk about the ways in which their engineers, their planners, right, the entire team there is supporting the protection of the city's interests in this project. I can't overstate that enough. The other part of it is that the federal funding to date has been specifically for the highway covers, and that funding has not been rescinded. The signals that they will look to are around whether or not there is a level of alignment at the local and regional level, right, in moving forward with the project. The other important contextual thing to note right now is that we're in the middle of a legislative process where there is a significant transportation package that has, as part of the package, a commitment to finishing the Rose Quarter project, which includes the delivery of the full project. And so there, too, the most important factor is going to be local and regional alignment, where we say we are ready, we've done all of the hard work of getting to the right project, and now we actually want it. And we will show up in Salem together to advocate for the delivery of the complete project. So all of those components will be important. And then, as JT said, because this project braids together so many different interests, even if there's a part of the project that, you know, any particular administration doesn't like, there are other components that they do. And so this is, again, where maintaining a commitment to the full project is important. This project is important for labor. It's important for freight. It's important for industry, just as it is for community, for advocates for multimodal transportation. And so, you know, the time to sort of hash out the project components is over, and this is where we have to really stay in alignment moving forward. And of course, always with a careful eye to making sure that what's delivered is what was promised. If at any moment that changes, you know, I would expect we'd have a very different message for you, but that is not today, and I don't foresee that.
Yeah, and just to add to what Winter's saying there, you know, we received three significant grants out of that same bucket of funding, all of which was frozen as part of the freezing of Biden-era infrastructure investments, right? The first was the Reconnecting Albina Planning Project grant that we're leading in partnership with the city. And if I'm not mistaken, the city was able to actually draw down additional funds from that grant as recently as about a month ago, which is fantastic news. We know that ODOT has also been able to draw down additional funds from their grant for early right-of-way acquisitions, again, within the past few weeks. So if we have heard anything at the federal level, it has been that while they have been very happy to issue stop work orders to projects that didn't have funds that were already obligated, they've been more hesitant to touch obligated funding. And this is really a testament to the fantastic work of the bureaus here in the city, specifically PBOT, who was so proactive in getting those funds obligated up front for Broadway Main Street and for the Reconnecting Albina Planning Project. It's also a testament to ODOT's proactivity in getting the 450 obligated. We expect that even though those funds, again, are reimbursement based, that funding will continue to flow. And if it doesn't, we have, deep alignment across every level of government that is committed to making sure that we can continue having a conversation. Metro Councilor Ashton Simpson actually introduced a conditional trigger into the resolution approving the programming of those $250 million in state funds for the early work packages that said, hey, if this funding gets yanked, we have to come back to the table as not only a city, but a region and discuss what the future of this project looks like.
That was an excerpt of presentations made by Albina Vision Trust at the Portland Transportation Committee meeting this morning. You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Dave Johnson.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We're on East Burnside. Across from the Jupiter Hotel, nestled in the middle of a block of storefronts, sits a little shop with a bright yellow door. Posters reading, "Humans for a Free Palestine," cover the front window. You have to step closer to see what's inside. It's a flower shop.
Okay, take a look at what we've got. Basically, everyone has chosen chef's choice, so that is good.
We are in my shop and studio, Coy & Co. We're on 8th and Burnside on the east side. I'm Lindsay Coy. I'm the Coy to the Co. Coy & Co. Yeah, that's my name.
A stack of black buckets sits beside a large utility sink in the back of the shop. Nearby shelves are packed with old rags and other odds and ends.
So what are you doing right now?
I am washing buckets, which I should have done before you came, but it's got to be done, so here we are. But yes, bucket washing is a very, it is part of doing floristry and farm work. It's an essential part of it. You got to have clean vessels.
Coy & Co. isn't your average flower shop. There are no fresh flowers when you walk in. Long tables of dried flowers are the first things you see. They're packed full. Little mason jars of flower heads are tucked between bushels of dried long stems. It smells earthy, like sweet musk and herb.
That's one of the things we hear the most when people walk in, is like, they'll say, "It smells so good in here." And my response is usually like, "Oh good, I'm happy to hear that." Because at this point I'm basically nose blind to it. But when I go, when I'm like out of town for a few days and I come back, I always walk in. I'm like, yep, this is my spot. This is home.
All the fresh flowers are in the back, stored in a refrigerator Lindsay made herself, with a little help from friends. It's a common theme here at Coy & Co. Lindsay put in checkerboard marmoleum flooring. She tells me it's biodegradable. She says she's never purchased a bucket. Everything is reused. Bouquets are wrapped in paper.
Yeah, I've never thrown away a bucket. Even our buckets that like maybe get cracks in them or something, I just use for dried flowers and they get marked with purple tape. But black plastic is really, really, really bad for the environment. And so, you know, maybe I'll just be buried with them. I don't know. But they're never getting thrown away.
The shop is 7 years in the making. Lindsay began selling her flowers at a stand outside of a friend's restaurant in her early 20s. She spent her youth homeless here in Portland and lost her financial aid for college. She was on her own and needed to make a living, so she got together with some fellow artisans. At the beginning, they shared rent for the back part of what is now the Coy & Co. storefront. Now, at 29, she rents the entire store herself.
Once you've kind of hit the bottom of the barrel, once you've lost everything, everything else is kind of a lot easier.
But this isn't the story Lindsay wants to tell.
I think that my story could be really easily used to promote a false narrative of the American dream and bootstrapping it. Like, look, a homeless queer girl like can do it. Why can't you? And it's like, I was able to do it because of all of the barriers I didn't have.
She's more interested in acknowledging her current privileges and using her resources to give back and foster an ethical relationship with the community and the world. Her activism and business choices center those desires.
Our main thing is that we're a sustainable forest. We sell 100% locally grown flowers, no plastics, no dyes, no bleaches, no preservatives. Yeah.
Is that stuff usually in flowers, like dyes,
yes,
and bleaches?
Yes, a lot, a lot.
Okay.
I believe that when you create a business, you're creating a system. So a good friend of mine, Amber,
likes to say, be a little harder on the system and a little softer on each other. And I think about that when I think about being a small business owner, because you are creating a system that didn't exist before. It's important to me that the systems that I'm creating are as sustainable as possible. So of course they should be intentional. I also believe that businesses should be responsible for the end life of anything that they bring into the world. So if you're creating, you know, a shoe, you should be responsible for what happens to not just the shoe, but also the packaging that the shoe comes in, like all that stuff, because the customer doesn't get to make that decision. Sure, you get to make a buying choice, but I think it's far more important that businesses are held accountable and taking responsibility for creating something that didn't exist previously.
I asked Lindsay about her posters. She told me that she feels the need to be doubly loud because there's so much silence about Palestine from other businesses around her.
Businesses have always been political spaces. They've always been arbiters of systems. We have some billionaires in power right now that are unelected. Businesses are political, no matter what you say, so if you choose to say nothing, that is still a political statement.
She quotes poet June Jordan and Angela Davis, saying, "Palestine is a moral litmus test of the world." She told me later that she fundraises for a friend displaced from Gaza and points to a nonprofit called Al-Ada, the Palestinian Right to Return Coalition, a Florida-based organization that supports Palestinian refugees.
I believed when I was first starting out that you could change things through the system that existed. I don't believe that anymore. I believe Baldwin, you can't change the system through the system, at least in my opinion, especially lately. I feel like every day I'm trying to figure out the why, and I do have to try and understand that, because it's really difficult to live in this world, because I just don't understand why not. Every day I'm trying to figure out the answers to these questions. We're humans in the good and the bad way. we're humans.
For KBOO, I'm Anna Wilcox.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you and with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people.
Be sure to tune into the Vinyl Pajama Party on Tuesday, April 22nd, for Everything's Earth, a very extra special.